next case this morning is case number 70462, Desert Air Wellness versus GB Sciences. We have Mr. Sheehan for the appellant cross-respondent, Ms. Anderson for the respondent, and Mr. Shapiro for the respondent cross-appellant. Mr. Sheehan, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Jeffries. I think Justice Pickering hit the nail on the head. This is much to do about nothing. This subsection is either not even applicable here, or if it is applicable, it was easily met by all of the people here today. If, as the justices point out, the statute says if the city or town or county that's proposed medical marijuana establishment has enacted zoning restrictions. First of all, we don't know whether these zoning restrictions, based on zoning testimony, were actually enacted. But to answer your question, if there are no, Mr. Shapiro just stated, if there were no zoning restrictions enacted, we're talking about medical marijuana zoning restrictions now, if there were none specific to the city of Las Vegas enacted at the time that the application was due, then this subsection doesn't even apply. Okay, start with that. And they haven't even shown that that is the case. But let's assume for sake of argument that there were zoning restrictions enacted by the city of Las Vegas. Those zoning restrictions were that you could not have the facility within 1,000 feet of a school, 300 feet of community centers, churches, things of that nature. We attached that, it's the record 8-1. So, what's the purpose of the statute? There's nothing in the statute that says you have to show that the city of Las Vegas granted you a license. The purpose of the statute is that your facility meets whatever local medical marijuana zoning restrictions there are. Those restrictions are 1,000 feet from a school, 300 feet from this. All right. Guess what we submitted with our application? A letter from a licensed surveyor saying that our facility was not or met those restrictions. So in other words, we met the purpose of the statute. Now the statute itself says, the subsection, again, I don't think it's applicable, but if it is applicable, it says you can show that you meet these city of Las Vegas zoning restrictions in one of two ways. The first way is you get a letter showing that you've been licensed by the city. Well, we know that nobody was licensed by the city at the time that the applications were due. And as Justice Perry stated out, that's the key time. The time here is when you submitted the application. The application itself says that you can't submit anything else. Nothing else will be considered. The application, furthermore, says that it has to be on the state's form. There's nothing on the form dealing with this. So what did we do? We did the next best thing possible. Because you couldn't possibly comply with the statute. The state's brief covers this. And Ms. Anderson said, the state's brief says, however, the city of Las Vegas did not complete its review of any location until October 30th, 2014, or issue any documentation of compliance at the time of submission of the applications. Therefore, no applicant was able to submit either proof of licensure or a letter from the city of Las Vegas at the time of the application because the city of Las Vegas had not done that. So the statute says, if the city of Las Vegas has enacted certain medical marijuana zoning restrictions, you have to show that you complied with those. There's no doubt that our facility complied with those at all times. There's no doubt that we submitted proof to in our application showing that we met those zoning restrictions. But the statute itself admittedly says there are two ways that you can submit this proof. Unfortunately, neither of the ways that you had to submit this proof, the statute said to submit this proof, were available to anybody. So what do? We did the next best thing. We provided a letter from a licensed surveyor showing we met the zoning restrictions. In fact, from the city of Las Vegas, in order for when your application to the city of Las Vegas, that's what they require you. They require you to submit the letter from the surveyor. So again, in the record, you will see that we submitted a letter from a licensed surveyor showing that we complied with this, and that is on the record 811.
Weren't there some other conditions that the city had in their ordinance?
And that was a brilliant point by everybody that also said, and you have to show the building, you've submitted, follow the building requirements. Well, the only way you can show that you met the building requirements is after you're done and you've got your C of O. So obviously you couldn't possibly, at the time you submitted your application, comply with that statute completely. But guess what? We did the best we could. We did the best we could. Now, there's very important things to consider between us and you. Alright, number one, we got city approval. Were we on the first list? No. But there's nothing magical about that date. You had to submit, if you want to read this literally, you had to submit at the time the application was filed in August. Ms. Anderson said that. That's what the rule was. You had this, and they also state on the application, no further information will be required. So, all right. At the time, when we submitted the application, the exact proof required by the subsection is not available to us. So what do? We submit the next best thing, the equivalent proof.
The question is, as you're harping on this, I use the term harp, no offense. Next best thing, is that good enough?
It is from this standpoint, Your Honor, substantial compliance cases. It's impossible to comply with the statute, but the purpose of the statute is to make sure that your building is 1,000 feet from school, it's 300 feet.
There are other conditions in there in terms of them looking at your operation, floor space, parking. As I was reading through what the city requires, doesn't that argue, and what you're saying, argue toward the fact that the state could have issued a provisional allowing your client to meet all those requirements?
Absolutely, and then when we got our, and again, unlike New Roof, we got approved by the city. More than that, and this is the part that's just the killer about this case with our clients. We built the facility. The state said we were approved. The city said we were approved. My client, those ladies back there, had spent 3 years of their lives. They invested all their money. We submitted the affidavit. They opened for business. They spent $2 million building the facility. Based on the state saying that they were approved, based on the city saying they're approved, and guess what? These folks didn't even sue us. They sued us and then dismissed us from the suit. We then built our facility and then they came back again. If there's ever been a better case for estoppel and latches, this is the one. This is the one. The Southern Memorial Hospital case is dead on point in estoppel. The Carson City versus Price case is dead on point in latches. They both say that the government can't tell you you have a license. You both spend $2 million building a facility, and all of a sudden, the state takes it back. And make no mistake, judges, the person taking our license back would be the state. It wouldn't be GB Sciences. The mandatory injunction is that the state take back our licenses. And in that Southern Memorial case, this Nevada Supreme Court said equitable estoppel is available against the government, that it would set justice on its head for the government to tell you, you have a license. For you to go out and build a hospital, for you to go out and build a marijuana facility, and then, 2 years later, take it out from underneath you after you've spent $2 million, your life savings, and 2 years of your life working on it. It would be absurd. So, we have a statute that says it's only applicable if there's specific medical marijuana zones. We're not even sure what they're up. We know that the medical marijuana zoning is 1,000 feet from schools, 300 feet from community facilities. We know we met that. The purpose of the statute is to make sure that you met the zoning requirements, the 1,000 feet from the school. We showed that we met the purpose of the statute. The substantial compliance cases, Justice Pickering has written very well, 100% on point in this case. We did, we met the purpose of the statute. It would be absurd to say you couldn't possibly meet the exact thing that is required in the statute, but you met the equivalent. You showed that you met the medical marijuana zoning requirements. You showed that the city eventually gave you a license. You showed that the city gave you, approved all your building requirements because they gave you a certificate of occupancy. And yet, you know what? Because you didn't 100% show the proof by the two ways that they set forth in the subsection, even though nobody could do that, we're going to take your license. I've never seen anything more unfair in my life. And that's why.
Could I interrupt your argument? The reason I asked the question in the last argument about this business about building requirements is because Section D of the Municipal Code 6.95.080D says that the in responding to the notice to provision. That the city is outlining the proposed location has been found in conformance with land use and zoning restrictions, and then goes on to say, does not preclude the city from conducting further review of an applicant's proposed MME for compliance with land use, zoning, and building requirements. The point I'm raising is that the ordinance itself did not outline building requirements, did not specify building requirements, and only stated in Section D that there would be a prospective review of building requirements, as yet undefined.
Absolutely, that goes to what Gary is saying. You couldn't possibly, when you submitted your application in August, know what the building requirements were.
But it gets back to the interpretation of the statute in the first place. It seemed like, to the extent that subsection 5 is applicable, it is only applicable to the extent that the ordinances have been enacted by the local jurisdiction, and then only to the extent that those ordinances have encompassed the provisions within the statute, either a zoning designation and or building requirements.
100% correct, and that's why the state decided to make this provisional and then final. And if the court will look at 453A3263, you will see in that section, before you get to the final, you have to show that you've got the business license and the building restrictions. That's why the states, the court should give deference to the states because they did it the right way under the circumstances. When you have a subsection that's impossible to comply with, you have to do with the best, next best thing, which is make it provisional, and then when you can possibly meet those requirements, then you get your final. That's what the state did. That was totally fair under these circumstances. But beyond this, I'm arguing Newby's case for them. My client's case is super unique from the standpoint that we built the facility. We got the license. We're not Newby, who was denied. We got the City of Las Vegas approval. It was just a month later. And there's nothing magical about that October 30th date, as Justice Perry-Gary said. If the information was due when the application was submitted, the fact that they got their approval on October 30th, we got our approval on December 17th, no difference. But again, latches and estoppel really set us apart. I'm going to reserve my last 3 minutes.
You have 3 minutes. Mr. Shapiro.
Thank you, Your Honor. Desert Air is unique and different from New Leaf in that the Planning Commission voted 4-1 to deny their application with the City of Las Vegas. And based upon that vote, Desert Air voluntarily withdrew their application to the City of Las Vegas. And if you look on the record at JA 578 through 583, and specifically on JA 583, it states, the following applications were withdrawn by the applicant, and the first one listed there is Desert Air Wellness. They argue substantial compliance when they actually withdrew the very application that would have given them strict compliance. And it was that process that gave 27 other applicants compliance specifically to the statute in question. Now, they argue that the purpose of the statute was to make sure that the MME was 1,000 yards from the school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the purpose of the statute. The purpose of the statute was to give local jurisdictions the right to determine how far they wanted the MME away from schools, and to determine all of those different issues. And so trying to argue that I withdrew my application from a local jurisdiction, but I was able to, after I fixed everything that the Planning Commission had problems with, give approval after the fact, that's not substantial compliance when 27 other applicants met that requirement. Now, they cite to a number of cases to talk about substantial compliance, but this is distinctly different from those cases. They cite Southern Nevada Memorial Hospital. But in Southern Nevada Memorial Hospital, this court specifically found that Southern Nevada, and I'm quoting, quote, Southern Nevada was unaware of any facts tending to negate or qualify its reliance on the department's CON authorization to proceed with the project of expansion, end quote. In this case, Desert Air was put on notice within weeks of receiving their provisional certificate that there were problems. They knew because they had been sued. Granted, there was a dismissal, a voluntarily dismissal in April. that a new lawsuit was filed in December, and they argued, well, between that time period, we spent millions of dollars. Everyone spent a lot of money. But at the end of the day, they were on notice that there was a problem. And so the lapses argument just doesn't carry weight. They knew weeks after the issuance, before they spent all of this money.
But does it affect the equitable estoppel argument? I understand what you're saying about lapses, but what about equitable estoppel? Why exactly does it affect the equitable estoppel?
Well, we don't believe that equitable estoppel applies, Your Honor. And when you look at the equitable estoppel arguments, I apologize, let me get to my notes there. The equitable estoppel argument goes back to the Southern Nevada Memorial Hospital decision. And in that decision, a party who had no notice that there was, in fact, Southern Nevada was put in a difficult position eventually once they did learn that there was a potential issue because there was a time limit they had to comply and there was a question as to whether they could. And they decided to comply and the court said, okay, they complied and moved on. In this case, unlike Southern Nevada, you are dealing with a provisional certificate. And unlike Southern Nevada, they had notice from the beginning. In fact, quite frankly, Your Honor, they can't claim ignorance when they themselves are the ones who withdrew their very application. They knew what was coming. They saw the writing on the wall. They knew the city of Las Vegas was going to deny their, at least the initial round, was going to put them in the denied field. And so they withdrew their application and then submitted a later date. Well, that's not what the requirement is. When you look at the statute says you have to have that letter by the expiration of the 90 days. You can't withdraw it and get it later.
Where does it say you have to have it before the expiration of the 90 days and not within the application process itself?
I'm looking at 453A322. It states, and again, the application didn't require this. The division's application said nothing of this requirement. 453A322 states, except as otherwise provided in some other statutes that are not applicable, not later than 90 days after receiving an application to operate a medical marijuana establishment, the division shall register the medical marijuana establishment and issue a medical marijuana establishment registration certificate and a random 20-digit alphanumeric identification number if, and then subparagraph A, the person who wishes to operate the proposed medical establishment is submitted to the division all of the following, and then in subparagraph 5, a letter from the applicable local government authority certifying compliance. And we've already gone through all of those arguments.
So you're saying the application specifically did not require that as part of the process?
It was not part of the application that was submitted to the division.
And part of the process.
Oh, it was a requirement of the process, but the letter itself was going to come from the local jurisdiction. And so it was submitted like the city of Las Vegas. It was submitted directly from the city of Las Vegas to the division. And it was submitted within the 90-day period prescribed by NRS 453A.
Well, I'm going back to Justice Hardesty's question on 453A-26. In a local governmental jurisdiction that issues business licenses, the issuance by the division of an MOU registration certificate shall be deemed to be provisional until such time as the establishment is in compliance with all applicable local government ordinances or rules, and the local government has issued a business license for the operation of the establishment. Why isn't that provisional?
Let's talk about that. I hate that, whatever that's called.
Yeah.
There's three phases here. There's the application phase, there's the provisional phase, and then there's the non-provisional or the certificate phase. In the application phase, you have to submit all of the requirements found in NRS 453A322. That's what must be submitted in the application phase. The problem with the saying that you have 18 months is you now take the requirement of 453A322, which clearly must be completed in the application stage, and you now extend that to include not only the application stage, but the provisional stage. That's not what the legislature said. That's not what the statute was. That wasn't the intent. And so, to extend the requirement from the application stage through the provisional stage is to not give effect to the intent of the statute. So, when you look at, let's see here, we've addressed the statutes of equitable order. Okay. Turning to our cross appeal, this goes into a lot of arguments that your honors have already heard. In this case, the district court decided that the Desert Air's certificate was inappropriately granted and directed the division to open up a new application process and issue it to a new to whoever gets it in that process. The problem with that remedy is twofold. First, it conflicts with Judge Johnson's decision in the New Leaf case. So we have an inconsistency between the district courts. But the second is that that denies GB Sciences any remedy at all. GB Sciences was rent as per the division number 13. If Desert Air and New Leaf had been disqualified as they should have been, then quite frankly, Acres Medical and GB Sciences would have received a medical marijuana provisional certificate to proceed forward. That's the right that they would have received if the law had been followed.
Counsel?
Yes.
One of the concerns I have, though, is that in the language of the statute, it talks about the division may issue 12 certificates. It doesn't say they must, but they may. So couldn't they have issued less? They're not mandated to have to issue the 12. So if you're correct, they didn't follow procedure, they strike a certificate, they're still within the law because they can't issue more than 12. They only have to issue. They can issue anything under. So by striking someone who doesn't comply, how are they mandated now to push someone up?
Well, there's two responses to your question, Justice Douglas. First, and I don't want to speak for Linda or Ms. Anderson.
Well, I'm asking you because you're advocating, you want your client pushed up, so I wouldn't
ask you. Absolutely. First, the state's position in the case below, I believe, was that the state should issue that number so that the people in those jurisdictions receive the benefit of medical marijuana. And if you don't issue all those applications, then they're deprived. Now, maybe that wasn't an argument that she made.
No, but didn't she also say, I think they have a limitation if they can only do it once a year, so...
Let me, well,
closed and you'd have to so, on and reopen it. I think that was partial of those.
But that goes to justice denied because GB Sciences, if the law had been followed, would have received
it. Why is it justice denied? This is a privilege. They've stated what they can and can't do.
But
we're
GB
now trying
Sciences
to throw in new terms and conditions. And, you know, you've talked in terms of operating within these conditions, so I'm asking you, if I'm looking at these conditions, they don't have to issue more than 12, they can issue less than 12, they can only issue once a year. So how is this appropriate? You're saying they're entitled to this. How are they entitled to it?
Well, GB Science is no more entitled to it than New Leaf or Desert Air. And that can't be disputed. This is a privilege. It's a revocable permit. But at the end of the day, the justice denied is the fact that GB Sciences fully complied with every requirement. And but for the division not applying 453A, 322, 385, but for that, GB Sciences would have received the certificate. And so, in order to put the parties in the position they would have been in if the law had been followed, then opening it up to a new application for a new unlimited pool of applicants is essentially to tell GB Sciences, sorry, you don't get any remedy. You now have to reapply against an entirely new set of applicants, get re-ranked against an entirely new set of applicants, and there's no justice there. It doesn't put the parties in the position they would have been in if the law had been followed. So, any other questions? I'll reserve the remaining to do a rebuttal or a question.
Ms. Anderson, you're on.
I can just answer any questions and then go back to the...
Well, there's 3 minutes left for this group's argument, so we're okay with the 3 minutes. So you got 3 minutes.
I get 3 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I'll make up for that in a couple minutes.
Mr. Shapiro was correct when he said the state had an interest in making sure that all the medical marijuana establishments, that was one of our interests. And in answer to the question earlier, did we recognize declaratory relief? Yes, we did. What we the caveat, though, is properly timed declaratory relief, because really what we see here is exactly the problem that you know, made it even worse is that the, you know, Judge Johnson did not allow GB Science to go forward in its case against Desjardins. They brought a separate action later. And that's when we run into really problems with declaratory relief, is when you are allowing, you know, you're then really interfering with the patients getting the medical marijuana that they need because you're not allowing the business to go forward. So yes, the state supports declaratory relief so that they looked at our system and look at our process, but you need to look at the timing requirement as well. And is it appropriate to bring, and I have the same conflict with Acres as well, even in their challenge, they waited until time went on and others were going forward. The way the legislature set this up, and there's been a lot of discussion of, does the state get to go or does the local get to go? They're both important. They both have to look at the community, and the legislature kind of did that balance by having the state look at certain issues. They did put in the section that said they, you know, look at the letter from the local. In that inaugural application process, the state did not include that in their process, even though some were developing ordinances and rules. Most jurisdictions have not really had the opportunity to go through that process. Las Vegas made a valiant effort to get it done, but, you know, Desjardins wasn't on notice that they needed to get that done by the 30th day. There's nothing in there that says, or New Leaf's argument that they have an appeal. You really look at the whole system, you wanted to do this whole provisional status. And that allowed the local to have a say. Once they knew where the state had put their places, they might say, we don't want them clustered. We don't want this group here. They may have discovered other issues that they thought were a concern of their community. And so this 18-month process, after we go through this very rush with the state doing 500 applications in 90 days, the community, though, still had a longer period of time to make sure these establishments were appropriately placed within the community.
Any questions, Ms. Anderson? Thank you. Mr. Sheehan, how much time does he have?
5:42.
Give him 5:42, and then I'll give you 2 minutes in the rebuttal. Give him a total of 5:42.
First of all, I'd like to address the Southern Memorial case. Couldn't be more on point. In Southern Memorial, they gave them a license, but there was an appeal process. Southern Memorial knew that there was a possibility that they could lose this appeal process, but there was a deadline. They had to build it within a certain period of time. Same thing here. We had a deadline. But more than that, they dismissed us from the lawsuit. There was no lawsuit against us while we were doing all this. But again, it's the state. The state. There's two estoppel arguments we have, one against the state and one against them. But the state is the one that gave us the provisional, and the state gave us the final, and the city gave us the final. So of course we're going to build our facility once that happens. And then to take it away from us now, that's the exact case of Southern Memorial. More, plenty more cases, equitable estoppel, could not be more.
What about Latches?
Latches, same thing, the Carson City, in the Carson City case, somebody showed up to, there was a city council meeting. The person showed up to the city council meeting and they sat on their dust and they didn't do anything. And then 8 months later, after the building had already been took place, then they came forward and said, oh, by the way, we don't want that to go forward. And the court said, no, you can't sit on your rights for 8 months and do this. Guess what they did? They dismissed it from the lawsuit and then we built the whole thing, and after we've already built it, then they come back up to us again. Not just clearly applicable. Same thing against the state. The state can't sit around and tell us if we can do all these things and then not do it.
Mr. Sheehan, as far as the withdrawal of the zoning application and all like that, does that matter from your point of view? I mean, because of the issues you raised previously. Mr. Shapiro is saying you lost your place in line, basically, by withdrawing it. What's your position on that?
It's totally irrelevant, because we got it a month later. Justice Perry asked him a very pointed question. Where does it say in here that you have to get that within a certain period of time? And he just, all he came back, there wasn't anything in there, and all he came back with was, well, it said that the state has to make their decision up in 90 days. But it doesn't say in there that you had to do it. But again, you had to submit the information, the 322, at the time of the application. And here's the point, another point that was raised. When he quoted the statute, he said, this is what the statute says. The statute says, if you have all these different things, the state shall give you a number allowing you to qualify for this provisional. It doesn't say that if you don't include something in that list that they can't. But again, we comply with the statute. We have six different reasons why we should win this case. If you go with us on any one of those reasons, we win. Number one, the statute. Either it wasn't applicable, or else we substantially complied with it. We substantially complied with it because the purpose of the statute was to make sure that, our facility met the local zoning requirements. The local zoning requirements were 1,000 feet, 300 feet. Our facility did that. We provided proof of that at the time. There's been nothing in here that says it. That's really, as far as anybody has to go here, is, okay, the statute couldn't be strictly complied with. They didn't strictly comply. Nobody could strictly comply. But, so if nobody is strictly complied, then you absolutely have to go with substantial compliance. And the question is, did our facility meet the zoning requirements? Obviously it did, because not only did we provide that letter, but we got the city license and we got the fine. So our facility clearly met that. So that's number one. Number two, the statute is ambiguous, obviously. The statute says you must submit the application on this form, and you can't include anything else. And there's no place in the form to do that. So that's clearly ambiguous. Then it's ambiguous from the standpoint you couldn't comply with it. How can you say a statute's not ambiguous if you can't comply with it? We've got building regulations that we have to include too. The statute is clearly ambiguous. So if it's ambiguous, you have to construe it in a manner that avoids absurdity and manifest injustice, which would clearly be the case here if you took our license 2 years later. That's number two. Number three, deference to the state. Plenty of cases all cited on that. The state's way of handling this, doing it in a provisional, because we can't figure out who's complied with the building requirements at the time of the application, and making it a two-step process, it makes sense to everybody in this room. And that's why we should need to give deference, and there's plenty of case law on that, in order to avoid an absurd result. Number four is the equitable estoppel. Two reasons for that, against the state, because they gave us a license, caused us to build this. They told us we had to build this within 18 months, otherwise we were going to lose it. Well, of course we built it in the 18 months, just like Southern Nevada, Southern Memorial. Same thing with GB Sciences. You can't just not file a lawsuit against us for a year later. They actually filed a lawsuit, then dismissed us for the case, and then a year later bring us back. They can't do that. That's a stop against them. So we have two stop arguments, two latches arguments, both against the state and against GB Sciences. Then we've got the line of standing for GB Sciences. They did not strictly comply with the statute either. Mr. Perigieri asked them many times, did you submit the two forms of proof that this statute required? Did you show that you met all the building regulations when you submitted the application? He danced around, because the answer is no. The state's brief said it very clearly. Nobody strictly complied with the statute because it was impossible. The city hadn't granted any licenses, the city hadn't granted any letters, and the building regulations were a year and a half away after the building was completed. Any questions?
Thank you. Mr. Shapiro, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. There was no compliance. It's on page JA578 through JA583. 27 applicants had strict compliance. The argument that nobody complied is disingenuous, and it doesn't support it. Now, there's been an argument about latches and estoppel in this case. Let me first address Carson City, which was a case you raised. In Carson City, the appellant or the respondent did nothing, absolutely nothing, until after construction had already started. The party doing the construction had absolutely no notice of any objection until well after the fact that they were underway. That is much different than this case, where GB Sciences was on notice, quite frankly, before the provisional certificate was even issued, because they withdrew their application with the city of Las Vegas. They knew before they even got it that they didn't comply. But certainly within weeks after the issuance of the provisional certificate, they knew there was an issue.
You said GB Sciences on the Desert.
Desert, thank you. Thank you, I apologize for that. The latches argument, again, latches just doesn't hold weight. The fact is, they're still operating even though a district court ordered them to turn in their provisional certificate. They were going to do this no matter what. And in fact, when you look at the delay, they argue this 8-month delay. Even if they had not been dismissed from the first lawsuit, the difference between the first lawsuit and the second lawsuit outcome was only 5 months. We're not talking about a big amount of time and everyone was spending money in that period of time. And then finally, there was an argument that the state didn't have to or could issue a provisional certificate even though they didn't have a letter from the city. When you look at the language of 453A.322, it's clear that that just wasn't the case. It's before the state could issue a provisional certificate. If the town had enacted ordinances, the town had to comply with it. So, with that, Your Honor, thank you.
Mr. Sheehan, Mr. Shapiro, thank you for your arguments in this matter. Very interesting. Very persuasive. This matter stands submitted.